I just had a fantastic lunch. I had an avocado and some blueberry beer.
Blueberry
ale. I feel very hipster-y.
Oh, blueberry.
Yeah.
I thought you said ooh berry. I was like, what kind of berry is an ooh berry?
It's that berry that makes you go ooh. So, what's up, Ronnie?
Oh, you know, busy, living life.
Great. Me too, except not busy, because I'm at home.
Are you hashtag me too, or just me too?
Just me too. Let's welcome everybody to the Aftershock Central Podcast, Ronnie.
Welcome everybody.
Hooray. We feel so proper right now. I don't know why.
I know. Professional and proper.
Oh my goodness. Man, yesterday's episode sounded so good. Whoever edited that was a genius.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Let's see how this one goes.
There is a correction on it, though.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
What's the correction?
Travis questioned if I was at baseball or not. And yes, in middle of America, in small towns that don't have football, we have fall ball and baseball the spring.
See, that's what I figured. That's why I said, chances are he's at baseball. And that was right.
It isn't conference time, but yes.
Yeah, I hear you. Now when I played football in high school, we were pretty much playing football year round. Cause even when it wasn't football season, we were training.
Yeah.
So I get it. Totally get it. All right. Welcome to, the second episode of the week. I'm Martin. Ronnie's here with me. Travis is on assignment.
Double the fun.
Travis has contracted rust, so he is out looking for a cure.
He didn't buy a sandwich out of a vending machine.
He might have. We don't know.
Yeah.
Ronnie and I are talking about Volition Number 2, Hot Lunch Special Number 2, and Moth and Whisper Number 1 today. So after today, we'll be all cut up once again.
Yeah.
We slacked last week, Ronnie.
Well, some of us fell asleep.
Some of us who shall remain nameless, but their name might be Martin Ferretti. Who knows?
Yeah, I think I did too.
Yeah,
once,
yeah. So. I fell asleep Wednesday. You fell asleep Thursday. All right, let's kick off talking about... Wait, do we have any news? You're the news guy.
No, we don't. Did you guys talk about the Colin Bunn hardcover line that's coming out?
We did not talk about that. Why don't you tell us about that, Ronnie?
It is the start of a new straight-to graphic novel line. And so this is the first book, and it'll be by Colin Bunn. And I'm not sure who the artist is.
What's the book called?
Something Hammer. Dead Hammer?
You are not prepared.
I'm not prepared.
Shame on you.
I'm not even in front of a computer.
Shame on you. You should be, see, if you lived in the world of Volition, then you would have all this information at the tip of your fingers. It's okay, because I have this information at the tip of my fingers. The first book is called Witch Hammer, and it's written by Cullen Bunn. The artist is one that you would not be able to pronounce, Ronnie. Dalibor Talajic.
There you go.
And it follows agents Frontenac and
Guinness.
That's
why I couldn't remember.
That's right. So you did it on purpose, so I would pronounce them.
Yep.
These two characters are in charge of bringing Witch Murderer, who wears a chilling ghost mask, to justice. Wow, that sounds awesome. Count me in. 64-page graphic novel. It's pretty exciting. It's going on sale November 28th.
Yep. And this is, like I said, this is the first one. There will be more coming down the line from different creators.
Yeah, I love it.
It's going just straight to graphic novel. And I believe it's an oversized hardcover.
I believe you are correct. 64 pages.
Yep.
Yep. Sounds awesome. I find it interesting. Not a lot of publishers are trying this kind of different publishing thing. Maybe like Image is an example. There's been a couple books that decided not to go monthly and go straight to original graphic novel.
Right.
Those will be a little bit longer. My assumption is that these are stories that they want to try out, but maybe don't have enough material for a full-fledged miniseries.
Right.
And even then, you know, they already have, like 8 books going out right now a month? 8 to 10 books? That's a lot for a small indie publisher, you know? So it makes total sense for them to do this.
Like you said on your other podcast, I think it was with you and Dinesh, it's like the binge-worthy Netflix style, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to wait. It's just instant
Yep. Did you say NSYNC?
Gravity All at Once.
NSYNC is your favorite band, isn't it?
I said Instant.
Oh, Instant. Sure you did. Freudian slip, Ronnie. Bye, bye, bye.
Sorry, JT.
JT doesn't listen. He hates comics. All right, let's talk about some books. How about that?
Sounds good.
Let's kick off with Volition, since I've already talked about it like 3 or 4 times in this episode.
Yep.
We are talking about Volition number 2, written by Ryan Parrott, with art by Omar Francia, letters by Marshall Dillon. Yeah.
The great Marshall Dillon.
The great Marshall Dillon. Man of letters. Man about town.
Is Men of Letters, is that like...
It's the new He-Man and the Masters of the Universe character. Man of Letters. So, alright, let's kick off with Volition. Volition number 2. I want to talk more about the world building and the story itself. I think that the story itself is pretty straightforward, right? Haley and whatever the big robot dude is.
Hail 19.
Hail 19. There you go.
AKA Bumblebee.
AKA Bumblebee. He gets, broken out of the junkyard heap, I guess. And they're going to do a Bunny and Clyde thing, to try to find a cure for Rust. Okay. Oh, that's cool. I like the world building a little more than the story itself in this issue. The one question I have for you is when the book kicks off, it's pretty, pretty happy, right? You've got the girl getting this balloon, and apparently they hide like, upgrade programs or VR programs in strings of balloons that you can buy at the park. Cause all this stuff is kind of pirate technology.
And the red ones.
And yes, the red ones. Which gave me a Matrix vibe. I know I talked about the Matrix when Travis and I talked about Relay. But you know, it was like, do you want the red balloon or the blue balloon? And that's like the red pill and the blue pill.
Right.
Of course, I mean, they had the yellow and green in here too, but still. I like that. But I liked what it leads into. And we learned that, this android has a boyfriend who's a human boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, Ronnie, would you date a robot?
Well, I think we've had this discussion before.
We have.
I'm not going to rule it out.
Okay. I mean, I think part of the problem is the robots that we have now are not very sexy. Let's be real. But some of the robots in Volition look pretty human, right? Like they might have metal interiors, but they have flesh and they have kind of skin. It's made of silicone, but they have kind of skin. I guess physically they would work just like a person. So mm-hmm. there's that. I mean, I'm not mm-hmm. implying anything, but maybe I am. but they also have very distinct personalities because their AI is advanced enough where they feel very human, right? And you can see how emotional she is about being with this guy. You can really tell that she likes him. I was trying to figure out what this program does, because they don't really explain it, right? When they jack into each other, she wakes up in the decommission facility. Cause I guess all this stuff was happening in the past, right? With her and her boyfriend.
Right.
But my assumption is that this program is almost like a VR sex thing in some way.
Yeah. That's kind of, cause they don't want her to do it and they don't, or figuratively and literally.
Yeah. But. Well, my question is, do you think it has something to do with Rust? Because have they explained anything about the Rust virus affecting humans in any way?
No. Okay. Not that I've caught on to.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that either.
Only hint was, like, when they do this, he's worried about it killing him.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to end up like a cantaloupe, am I? She's like, you'd be a cute cantaloupe.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I'm not a big fan of cantaloupes, so I disagree, Amber. Cantaloupes exactly. are terrible fruits. Nobody should eat them.
Now, okay. If she would have said jackalope, that might have been okay.
Oh, the jackalope. Reminds me of America's Funniest Home Videos with Bob Saget.
Yep.
So I found that whole thing really interesting. You know, I've talked about when we discussed the first issue how I would love to see more of how humanity works in this world.
Yeah.
With robots being so human-like. And yep. That gave me a little hint, which is probably why it was my favorite part of the issue.
Yeah, it's definitely a different spin on what's happening now, right?
Yeah.
Like with racial tension, yeah. Only the players have changed, but the game's still the same.
Mm-hmm. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Exactly.
Is that our episode title? All right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Trying to think what else I really dug about this. I liked at the end how we're introduced to these robot bounty hunters.
Yeah.
Which seems like they're going to play a big role in the next couple of issues. I couldn't tell if the lady was human or not.
Yeah. I also like the Sam and Twitch characters too.
Yeah.
Cause like you said, it starts off like fun, and I would say the overtone of it would be like a fun type of thing. But if you actually deep dive into it, it's kind of serious with comedy overtones.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, this book is not entirely serious, which is good.
Right.
I think the future is a little bleak in this world, and doing that juxtaposition with comedy, I think it works pretty well to advance the story.
Right.
Yeah, it was cool. Art is still fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But going back to the bounty hunter, so I like how they just made it known that it was the big corporation that was paying them to put the hit on, though.
Mm-hmm.
For yep. The illegal upgrades.
Yep.
That happened in California, by the way, Travis.
Damn it, Travis. California. Lawbreakers. See, that's where they had Cal exit, because they wanted to illegally upgrade their robots.
Yep.
Yeah. I hope that book comes back, by the way.
Someday.
We'll see. We'll see. Wrong publisher. Of course, the best part of this book, I'm going to have you guess. What is the best part of this book, Ronnie?
Where Hale 19 had to rip off his arm, and then when they found the arm, it was fingering them.
All right, that's pretty good. However, it's incorrect. The best okay. part of this book is when they're in the illegal upgrade den, and you've got the guy playing on his iPad, you got a guy smoking a bong or whatever, and there's a robot uh-huh. that's getting an upgrade on the operation table.
Uh-huh.
His name is Martin.
Yeah. Well, we all know that all Martins need upgrades. Like, I mean, that's why you just got an upgrade, so.
Yeah, I just got upgraded to full-on robot, and I'm freaking badass.
Yeah. Let's just hope that Martin doesn't turn into Cyborg, because then we might have an issue.
Well, true. But I do have I can project a holographic smiley face. So, I mean, that's kind of an upgrade.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
You could throw out all kinds of emojis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my superpower.
So, if you could get an upgrade, what would your upgrade be?
Well, obviously, holographic emojis.
Okay.
Like, no, in real life, all right, so you mean like a technological upgrade, or like if I had a superpower?
Like, let's put it on in our world, right?
Okay, so.
So, what would be one thing that you could upgrade that, like for me, it would be more space so I can retain information.
Hmm. Unlimited memory.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm trying to think. I looked up how much data the brain can hold, and I can't even remember now. I do remember that the data transmissions to the brain are like 64K. So if you get over 64K, it's like a giant overload.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny too, though, because like when, I mean, you do tech stuff, so you know this stuff. Like, think about
yeah.
when you get an image, right? Like, you like to share memes. Like, those memes are like, yeah. I don't know, 200K, right? For those JPEGs. Mm-hmm. And they're not even close to the resolution that, like, the human eye can see, right? Like, if you have a 50 megapixel image, which is what the eyes can see, that would be like, I don't know, a 10 meg image.
Right.
Think about how, like, how much compression your brain does, like, in real time to get all the information from your environment. That's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're nerding out. We can't be doing that on this podcast. It's a comic book podcast. We're nerds enough.
Well, I mean, it goes with the book. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think, I would upgrade, my legs. In fact, my wife and I talked about this yesterday because I had a surgery on my leg yesterday and, I would have bionic legs so I could run infinitely and never get tired.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think that'd be cool. It'd also give you like, you know, super strength kind of because you could lift heavy things.
You wouldn't be able to fly. You'd just jump with style.
Yeah. I think I would do like a vision upgrade where you could see in like different wavelengths, like infrared and ultraviolet. That could be like the Predator.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
There you go.
And then I'd be a bounty hunter named Martin. Or Mr. Martin Tin. I mean, it depends how you read it.
Yeah.
But I like Martin. Yeah, cool. Cool. Anything else on this book?
No, I'm pretty good.
Awesome. Let's rate it up. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on this one, too.
Brilliant. Let's move on over to what was last month your favorite book and my favorite book, Hot Lunch Special, issue number 2. This is written by Elliot Rahal with art by Jorge Fornes and letters by Taylor Esposito. Yeah. Wait, is Taylor the one that did our logo?
No.
Okay, it was somebody else. Never mind.
Yep.
I was about to give him a double shout out. All right, so tell me a little bit about this book, Hot Lunch Special 2.
Well, with all of the SDCC announcements of stories getting writ for TV,
mm-hmm.
this can definitely be one of those, and I wouldn't be mad at all.
Yeah, I'm shocked that nobody's picked this up yet.
Yeah. Because this would be the next great thing on FX or even HBO or something.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think the Fargo comparison would be a little obvious, right? Because they're both in Minnesota. It's got like the criminal thing, the cops in the background trying to get information, all that stuff. So the Fargo comparison is pretty obvious. But it's also kind of like True Detective on HBO. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yes.
A little bit of that. So I really
exactly
dig it.
Like that.
Yeah, I really dig it. I'm surprised it hasn't been picked up for some other kind of media.
For me, this is Elliot's premier prime book.
I would say second. I
cult classics.
Yeah,
is
cult classics is fantastic.
Okay. I mean, that's a good argument.
And the thing is, both books are actually pretty similar. The difference being that cult classics has a little more supernaturally type stuff. Uh-huh. This is more grounded. But I think the storytelling and the way the characters are and the way the characters are shown, it's very similar in tone between the two books.
Yeah. And both of them could be great TV shows too.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So this one deals pretty much with the fallout of Elliot Rahal getting killed in the first issue.
Yeah, basically.
I know that when we talked about the first issue, we were kind of curious how much of this was true. I saw, I think Elliot went to a release party at some shop in Minnesota and he was tweeting about like, the stuff that's real in the story, and apparently a lot of it is more real than we think.
Right.
So, so I thought that was really interesting. So it's almost autobiographical.
Yeah. And what's cool is even if it wasn't autobiographical in some ways, it's still real feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Cause like, the mom, like all my kids are grown now, but even if one of them was like that, I could see me or Melissa being crazy like that well, she wasn't really crazy, but down, you know, depressed type thing.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll just call her Melissa because I would be the other guy that, you know, gets in a bar fight and all that stuff.
But like that poor guy, they beat him up.
Yeah, but it also is the domino effect of being married into, like, the mob.
Sure, yeah. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought there was some interesting stuff in here with the Irish mob family guy. How he calls to apologize, and the dude is like, are you effing serious? How are you apologizing? You just killed my grandson.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, since we're talking about that, you know, the lawyer finished up the paperwork. It's on the way.
Yeah.
But
of course the grandpa or grandfather.
Yeah.
Is like, I don't give a damn about your paperwork.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to send it to the FBI. F your paperwork. Which I found really interesting too. The Irish guy, it almost seems like he's way in over his head, right? Like he comes from a mob family also.
Yeah.
But it's almost like he wasn't really prepared to deal with this kind of situation beforehand. Cause even though he's being a shitty person.
Well,
you're good.
Yeah. And in parallel, the Irish guy's son screwed up. Or is a screw up.
Yeah.
And so is the main mafia guy, the Corey family. Is that right?
Yep.
Like his son's a screw up too. The dad of the son that got killed.
Absolutely.
So they're more alike than what they might want to admit, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wonder why they killed the kid. You know what I'm saying? Like that was obviously not in the cards.
Right. That was just a like collateral damage thing, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I guess you're right, right? Because he was there working late, cleaning up and stuff.
Yeah,
and smoking a joint.
They didn't even know that he was in there.
Yeah. Yep. Which that's too bad. It was pretty emotional though. We do get to see the funeral kind of that they hold at the movie theater, which I thought that scene was really nice. Especially the explanation as to why it's in the movie theater. And then you've got a big reveal at the end. When the grandfather and his son are talking, and the mom shows up and overhears the conversation,
mm-hmm. which we already knew as readers.
Sure. So, I mean, does that mean that she didn't know that they're like a gangster family?
Well, I think she knew, but she just dealt with it because things were coming up roses for them.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And she just separated herself from that mob side, but now she's into it.
Yeah, that's possible. It's very possible. Well, kind of like her dad did too, right? Because her dad didn't want to be part of the mob. He just kind of married into the family and had to do it in order to be allowed to marry his wife.
Right.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I like the multi-generational juxtapositions as well. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's rate this one up.
I'll go first.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 5 again.
You are goddamn right. 5 out of 5 it is. All right. Let's move to the final book of today, and that is Moth and Whisper #1, written by Ted Anderson with art by Jen Hickman. And I don't know who Jen Hickman is, but I love this art style.
Her art style is awesome.
Yeah, it's very cool, and I like the way that it changes between the flashbacks and the modern world scenes as well.
Yeah, and I like how it changes from whichever character we're following as well.
Mm.
Like if it's with Whisper, where it's silent, then it's kind of like shadowy-ish. I don't know.
Yeah, foggy.
Kinda. But then if you know we're with the moth, who can change into anything. It's kind of more vibrant colors and clear type thing.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's colorful on the moth on the moth stuff, and then Whisper is like blacks and blues.
Right.
Yeah, I dig that. I love when an artistic team can get together like that and make the art part of the story. So integral as it is done here. I think it's really well done.
Agree.
I gotta say I was extremely pleasantly surprised with this book.
Yeah.
When I read the solicit, I was a little concerned, because it seemed like they were overemphasizing the gender fluid thing.
Right.
And it almost felt like, okay, like kind of marketing speech for like, hey, we have a transgender character. Everyone should buy this book because we're doing something new and different. And, yeah. And that's not at all what this book is.
Right. It's so, kind of like when the marketing came out for it, it was kind of like an overweight female that got marketed by a different company.
Oh, snap. Shots fired.
But I'm with you on this. Like, every level of this book is amazing.
Yeah.
I like the sneakiness. I like the espionage part of it. I like the transparency of, we aren't even sure if it's a boy or a girl.
True. It's very true.
And which it doesn't really.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Matter.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. It doesn't matter in terms of the story. But I think the changes are really, really well done too, right?
Yeah.
From not just when the character plays Moth, who is kind of a shapeshifter. I mean, she's got technology that allows her or him to change, obviously clothing, but also facial expressions and makeup. It's almost like in Mission Impossible, right? They have that 3D printing machine that can print other people's faces, except it's instant.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like...
Within seconds.
Yeah, yeah, within seconds. Just like whisper, makeup, whatever, like, you know? It's like, okay, bam, and like, you're somebody else. I think that's really well done. And it shows really well in some of the panels, like, I'm trying to think what it is. I think when she's trying to buy some of the stolen tech, and she walks off, and like, as she passes through the lamppost, she goes from one costume to another. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Really, really well done. And I like the fact that this person can also not just shapeshift like that with that Weaver costume, but also shapeshift from Moth to Whisper.
Yeah.
And like pretty instantly too.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much his or her parents trained her to do this job, right? Because the parents have been gone for 6 months, according to the story, right? The original Moth and Whisper.
Right.
There's no way that he was able to learn all that information, how to use all this technology in 6 months. I don't think.
Well, you would have to assume that they've known about it also, because once he or she's watched this video like every day since they've been gone.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew exactly which safe house to go to.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, you know, just think if your parents end up being missing or whatever, and you get this weird ass video, you wouldn't know heads or tails of the situation if you didn't already know what was going on.
Yep. Yep, I agree. I think there's some really good world building in here as well, and it's all pretty subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when they're talking about the Moth and how she can shapeshift and all this, the next scene you see is you meet the main character posing as Moth, and you have a little billboard in the background that says your face will be seen, and there's cameras everywhere.
Yep.
I thought that was really cool. Yep. You've got the little thing with the rations. Apparently things are not going well in this world, right? Like there's cameras everywhere. People don't have enough food. So you eat like mealworm ramen out of a can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I like that. I like that.
Also, the main, I want to say bad guy, but I guess it's the main suspect.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Mr. Wolf.
Oh yeah.
And he's like the bad of the bad.
Yeah.
But in public appearance, he's a good guy, so he's like the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed that when she goes to look for Wolf, she goes into the bar, but you know, to kind of expand on the fact that this place sucks, the bar doesn't sell alcohol. The bar sells water.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting as well.
Yeah, and you can't overemphasize sucks enough in that situation.
Yeah, no kidding, right? No kidding. But yeah, really interesting. I obviously we had a nice little twist in here when she goes to meet Wolf. because Moth and Whisper had worked with this guy before.
No, that's not Wolf.
Oh, yeah, what's this guy's name?
Hack?
Hack?
It's H-A-A-G, I think.
Okay, yeah, you might be right. Anyway, when she goes to meet him, you learn that her parents had worked for this guy before.
Right.
And it seems like maybe they double-crossed him.
Right.
Because they don't really have any moral compass. They just work for whoever pays them.
Yeah.
And that kind of is what kicks off what I'm assuming the story will become.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Wolf doesn't show up until they're eating ramen there.
Yeah.
and opening up the files.
Yep, that's right.
So.
That's right. So, yeah, really cool. Really cool. I loved everything about this.
Yeah. Everything, the story, the complex part of the art, which we've already talked about, like, the play on words, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything. This is like a solid 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I agree. There's so much, it's really interesting, right? Because on a first issue, you want to establish as much as you can about the world, without giving too much away. And this book manages to do that with so little.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no long-winded explanation about, like, there was a nuclear war or whatever the hell. Like, you just see things in the background that add to the overall feel of this. And I love it. It's great. It's great.
Yep. Very, open world is very vague.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yep.
And also, I think it's a good opposite to, like, Alters. So if, you know, you really loved Alters.
Yeah.
Because Alters was fun and bright, kind of, with a little bit of dark elements. But, like, here, it's the complete opposite, where everything's a dark conspiracy-type world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, of course, the trans guy.
Yep.
Transgender part.
Yep. Fantastic. All right, and we were rated it 5 out of 5. Bam! See?
Yep.
This is a professional podcast.
Yeah.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, in and out.
In and out.
That's how we do it. All right, Ronnie.
With my cybernetic yellow arm with my finger waving in the air.
Cool. You've been listening to the Aftershock Central podcast with Martin and Ronnie. You can find Ronnie at Rumbar316. I'm at Geekbind. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And I guess if you want to get in touch with Travis, tell him how awesome this episode was at The Great Magnet. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.
Shock the world.